see you guys. No, you're good. Seems like everybody navigated the trip hazards okay. All right, so our reading for our class is from Revelation chapter 8. So if you could just go ahead and turn to Revelation chapter 8, I'll read that for us. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. And I saw the seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. And another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer. And there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense, which came with the prayers of the saints, ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. And the angel took the censer and filled it with fire of the altar and cast it unto the earth. And there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake. And the seven angels which had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth. And the third part of trees was burnt up, and all green grass was burnt up. And the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. And the third part of the sea became blood, and the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. And the third part of the ships were destroyed, and the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars. So as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. And I beheld an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe! Woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound. So with that, I'd like to introduce our brother Steve to talk to the topic of time periods of the apocalypse.
I think we're on, can we all hear us back there? Is that loud enough? So the speakers are working. Well, good morning, brethren and sisters. I'm expecting some young people. That's not a criticism, by the way, to say that you're not looking young. Not very many young people out there, or young as I would classify. Who's under 20? Oh, okay, well, I can address some under 20-year-olds, I suppose. Well done. Well, brothers and sisters, really nice to be with you, and young people, really nice to be with you this morning. Now, what we thought we'd do among a number of subjects we could have chosen is to, well, I don't know, just have a look at a couple of key things out of the apocalypse. And looking out on the audience, with you who are not so young, I'm sure in this audience there are a number of brothers and sisters that have covered this material before. You've probably got a very good grasp of some of this. So it will be revision. And with the apocalypse, it doesn't hurt to have it sharpened, because put the apocalypse down for a few months and those things we thought we had in our minds as being crisp tend to become very quickly dulled. So revision for those who know a lot. For those who know moderately and understanding the apocalypse, we'll have a few things to learn. Who is relatively new to the apocalypse? Newish. A few. Don't be overawed. Don't be frightened or disillusioned. If you can't grasp all of the material that we're going to be looking at this morning, then you'll grab it in layers, and after a while you'll have some things written in your Bible, and probably after 30 or 40 years, you'll then begin to understand the book of Revelation. All right, brother. Now, look, we could take a lot of areas. With the apocalypse, you could study the seven letters, you could do the seals, you could do the trumpets, you could do the vials, you could do the seven thunders, you could do the kingdom visions. Well, we're just going to take one little area of study where you can zoom in and just look at the time periods, the various time periods that are in the book of Revelation. Now, with respect to the time periods, there are a number of keys that we can use to unlock the time periods of the apocalypse. When you face them, and I'm going to show you a list of them in a moment, there are about 17 of them. When you have a look at the time periods, whether it's 42 months, whether it's 3.5 days, whether it's time, times, dividing of time, when you look at the time periods, you will either face a time period in the apocalypse that is a single conversion. By that I mean this. I'll give you an example. If you were to turn up Revelation 11, so let's have a look at Revelation 11, a classic example for those who are new to this area. Here's an example of a single conversion. And there are a few of them. They're the easy ones. Classic example, Revelation 11. And in Revelation 11, this is the culminating and the second of the three great earthquakes of the apocalypse. This culminates in the French Revolution, which we find in verse 13. So when you come to Revelation 11, just ignoring for the moment the first two verses, which are about the saints, the temple, the altar, and the holy city, three titles given to the saints in verses 1 through 2, they're the brothers and sisters in Christ. Just moving away from them for the minute, we're introduced to the witnesses, my two witnesses, called the two lampstands, called these two prophets. Well, in verse 3, I'll give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days. Very simple, 1,260 days. On the basis of a day for a year principle, a day for a year, 1,260 days is 1,260 years. Single conversion, day, year, 1,260 days, 1,260 years. And these two witnesses, political and religious, not the truth, not holders of the truth, they would be against the papacy for 1,260 years. Does anybody know, those who weren't at the weekend last weekend, does anybody know when these witnesses began to witness against the papacy? What year? Who's got it written in their margins? Or who's got it implanted in their brains or minds? When do these two witnesses, anti-papal witnesses, start witnessing, and at the end of their witnessing, they would be killed, as it is recorded in Revelation 11. Anyone got a starting point for them? AD 312. All right. So if you're jotting any notes, the witnesses began in verse 3. These anti-papal witnesses began to speak out when Constantine came into Rome in 312 and said, "This is it. This is how it is, fellas. We're now going to introduce, and I'm going to raise up the apostasy." He didn't call it the apostasy. "I'm going to raise up this Catholic system, clothe her with the sun, put the moon under her feet. She's going to wear a crown of 12 stars." And there were people who didn't like it, and they witnessed against Constantine. So the two witnesses began in 312. And they would witness for 1,260 years and then begin to be killed. So what's 312 added to 1,260? 1572, good. And therefore, in verse 7 of Revelation 11, "And when they shall have finished their testimony," the two witnesses, the anti-papal witnesses, religious and political, "when they have finished their testimony, the beast," the Catholic system that ascendeth out of the abyss, "will make war against them," and I'm going to say this, "begin to kill them." 1572, that's verse 7. That's the great massacre of the Huguenots in France on St. Bartholomew's Day. So these witnesses would continue for 1,260 years and then begin to be killed. 1572 was that awful massacre where 71,000 Huguenots were slain in a few months. Alrighty, so that's 1572. Just while we're here, be careful of this. It says in verse 8, "And their dead bodies," that is the witnesses, we're talking figurative language here, "their dead bodies shall remain in the street for 3.5 days. Now, I'm not going to say any more about this, otherwise we'll go into Revelation 11 and not get out. We will go into that door and remain locked in that room for the next 5 hours. All I will say is this. Verse 8, be careful of this. Verse 8 is 1685. Between verse 7 and verse 8 are 113 years. So the massacre on St. Bartholomew's Day, 1572. 1260 years from 312 to 1572. Then the witnesses begin to be slain. And for 113 years, they're up and down until you get to verse 8, 1685. The political and religious power of the Huguenots in France was totally, absolutely, and completely gagged. And they remained in the street from 1685 until they rose on their feet in 1789 in the French Revolution. So just a little note, you can do the research yourself. Verse 7, 1572. Verse 8, 1685. And 113 years between verse 7 and verse 8. Now, we won't say any more about that, as I said, otherwise we'll end up doing Revelation 11 as a study this morning, which we don't want to do at this stage. Single conversion, there's an example. 1260 days, singly converted, day for a year, 1260 years. You come across time periods in the apocalypse where a double conversion is needed. Like, well, while we're in Revelation chapter 11, let's go 42 months. So 42 months, verse 1 and 2. And the altar, the temple, and the holy city shall be trodden underfoot for 42 months. The temple, the altar, and the holy city, three titles of the saints, three titles of the brothers and sisters. They would be trodden underfoot for a period of 42 months. So we're going to doubly convert. So what do we do? 42 months. How many days in a month? 30, Jewish month. So the moon tracks around the earth at 28 point something something of our days. The moon does one tracking in 28 point something days. But from a Jewish calendar, they have 30 days in their months. Hence, in a Jewish year, 360 days, 12 multiplied by 30. So we've got 42 months. 42 months, 30 days in a month, multiply 30 by 42. What's 40 multiplied by what's 30 multiplied by 42? 1260. So 42 months multiplied by 30 days in a month, we get 1260 days. That's a conversion. So we go months to days, one conversion. We convert again from days to years and we get 1260 days. Equals, on a day for a year principle, 1,260 years. There's another couple of others that I'll show you in a moment, which really shows how you need to doubly convert. All right, we don't want to confuse ourselves and get too complicated in this introduction, otherwise you'll close your books, your Bibles and your minds, and we won't have a very long class. So sometimes the time periods are singly converted, sometimes they need a double conversion, and sometimes there's a period in the book of Revelation where there is no conversion. Does anybody know the time period in the book of Revelation where there is no converting from days to years? It is as it is. It is as it's read. Where's that one? Yes. Satan shall be bound up. The power of flesh or sin shall be bound 1,000 years. And we shall reign with him for 1,000 years. So when it says 1,000 years and it relates to the millennium, there is no conversion. It is as it is. We don't singly convert day for a year, nor do we doubly convert. It's the only one where there is no conversion, and there's a reason for it. There's a reason, which we will, time permitting, explore as we go through. So, single conversion, how do we determine? Double conversion, how do we determine whether it should be doubly converted? And when there is no conversion, well, that's the 1,000 years. Brothers and sisters, young people, these are the three criteria that we use. I'm going to give some examples in a moment. The three criteria we use are these. Is it single? Is it double? Predominantly those two. Single or double? Well, it all has to do with what we call the decorum of the symbol. The decorum of the symbol. Has anybody heard that expression before? Decorum of the symbol? Who hasn't heard that expression before? Okay. Brother Thomas uses that expression in Eureka. Now, we know what decorum is. Decorum is appropriateness of behaviour. We have decorum at the table. Or we should. We have decorum in the meetings. Appropriateness of behaviour. When you come to decorum of the symbol, there's got to be an appropriateness, otherwise the symbol is nonsensical. While we're in Revelation 11, let me give you an example. And those who were at the weekend last week have got a head start on this one. While we're still running through verse 7 and verse 8 of Revelation 11, the two witnesses, they started witnessing against the papacy in 312. 1572, great massacre in France. The French kings, the Bourbon kings, and the Catholic hierarchy are going to get rid of the Huguenots as best they can. So they begin to kill them in 1572. We come down through 1685, and with this term you may or may not have heard, the revocation of the Edict of Nantes, whereby religious freedom to the Huguenots was revoked. It was taken away. So in 1685, in verse 8, the Huguenots were totally and absolutely gagged. Louis XIV, the Sun King, is on the throne in France. In verse 8, Louis XIV. And he says to the Huguenots, the political and religious anti-papal witnesses, he says to the Huguenots, get out. You've got 15 days to get out of France. Go. Take your chooks, your pigs, your cows, your aunts, your uncles, grandmas, nephews. Get out of France if you don't want to be converted to Catholic. So this is where they're going to be politically and religiously gagged in 1685. And over a million fled France. Some went to America, some went to South Africa, some went to England. And they took with them the seed of revolution. But there was the killing, the final slaying politically and religiously of these Huguenots in 1685. What's this got to do with a double conversion? Well, or the decorum of the symbol, I should say, and a double conversion. What's this got to do with that? Well, in 1685, brothers and sisters, they would remain in that death state until 1789, where they come back to life in the French Revolution. What is 1685 through to 1789? How many years is that? How many years from 1685 through to 1789? Anyone got good mental skills? Well done. But it depends when you start, I suppose, doesn't it, really, whether it's 105 or 104. But well done, thank you. But it's 105 because of the starting point, which I didn't tell you. Well, it's true, isn't it? You could say, well, do I count that year or do I leave that year out? Well done. It's 105 years that they would remain dead, politically and religiously dead, 105 years. But the Bible doesn't say that. How long are they to remain dead in your Bible, in Revelation 11? And they shall remain dead for, good, 3.5 days. Yet it's 105 years. Literally, from 1685, Louis XIV, Sun King, built the palace at Versailles. He says, get out. I'm revoking this edict that was put into place years and years before. Get out if you're not going to become a Catholic. And they would remain in a death state, and then they'd come back to life again in 1789. So they'd remain in a death state for 105 years. But the Bible says they'll remain dead for 3.5 days. Decorum of the symbol. Let me show you something and tell me if your head's starting to pound if we go too fast. Think about this. The witnesses are going to witness for 1,260 days. That's easy. Day for a year, 1,260 years. If God, and I say this reverently and respectfully, if God was to be consistent through Revelation 11 with that kind of time perioding, then what we would read in these verses in Revelation 11 is the dead bodies will remain in the street for 105 days. Days, which is 105 years, day for a year. We'd go, that's so easy. The witnesses witnessed for 1260 days. I get that. Day for a year, single conversion, 1260 years. I get that. And if we came down to verse, where's the verse that says they'll lay in the street for 3.5 days? Verse 9, thank you. If there was a consistency spinning out of verse 3, we'd get to verse 8 and we'd go, their dead bodies shall lie in the street of the great city, which is France, which is spiritually called... No, that's not the one, verse 9. And they of the people and kindreds and tongues and nations shall see the dead bodies 3.5 days. I could read 105 days and I wouldn't have to scratch my head. I'd go, I know that. I've already seen that recipe before in verse 3. 105 days, day for year principle, 105 years, 1685, 1789. It all works out easy. Why didn't God say 105 days and make it easy for you and me? Why did he say 3.5? It's all got to do with the decorum of the symbol, appropriateness of behaviour. These dead bodies would lay there. Nobody would touch them. Nobody would bury them. They would stay as they remained, and people will be stepping over them. Look, they're still there, but they're inactive. And one day they're going to come back. The birds won't ravage them. The beast won't come and tear them apart. They stay as they are for 105 days. But God says, nope, not appropriate decorum. It's 3.5 days. Why is it inappropriate for bodies to remain in a street for 105 days? What did Jesus say about the body? After 4 days, it stinketh. After 4 days, the body stinketh. It corrupts. You see what God's saying? No, these bodies are not going to be laying in the street for 105 days in their pristine state and coming. That is not appropriate decorum. The body decays after 4. So God brings it just before 4. God says 3.5. Well, that's decorum. But that gives us a bit of a head scratch as to how we convert 3.5 days to 105 years. Who's got the answer? Pardon me? Yes, you're on the ball. You're close. Can you expand on that, Brian, without being intimidated? All right, here we are. The decorum says it's got to be written down in such a way that it meets decorum, therefore these bodies cannot remain laying out in the open for longer than 4 days. So God says 3.5. And 3.5 matches 105 of our years because we're talking about lunar days. Lunar days. And we've got the basis because it starts off in chapter 11, 42 months. Based on the lunar cycle, 30 days in a month, 30 multiplied by 42. We've got the lunar flavour at the beginning. Lunar days. This is what it means. A lunar day is the time it takes for the moon to track around the world. So here goes the moon. Once, 30 of our days. Second day of the lunar cycle, 60 of our days. Third lunar day, 90 of our days. Half a track of the lunar, how many of our days? 15. 90 and 15? 105. Do it again. Here's the moon. 30 of our days. 60 of our days. 90 of our days. Halfway? Another 15 to 90? 105. Days. 3.5 lunar days is 105 of our days. Then a day for a year principle. Day for a year, 105 days is 105 years. You see what God does? Does not put 105 days with the bodies laying in the street. Inappropriate decorum. The body stinks. So God says, zip, zip, and says, get your minds working. Get your minds working. And we go, oh my, my, my. And there were some people who weren't Christadelphians who actually worked that out. I haven't got the slide here, but Belloc, in his the French Revolution, says the Huguenots remained a silent but ever watchful body for the 100 or so years between the revocation, 1685 to 1789. Belloc, not a Christadelphian, he says the Huguenots remained a watchful and ever-present body for that period. And he says the 100 or so years. Everything okay in our minds? We got that? And the reason we showed you 3.5 days, lunar days, not appropriate decorum to say 105 days laying in the street. It would be easy for us. We'd just simply go 105 day for a year, 105 years. All happy? Okay. Could you explain that to somebody if you needed to? All right. So decorum of the symbol is a very, very important impact with respect to whether we use single conversion, double conversion. Context is also very important. Again, these 3.5 days, we're in a context of France. That helps us unlock the meaning of the symbol and also does consistent knowns, indisputable knowns. Example in Revelation 11, there are absolutely rock-solid, indisputable knowns in Revelation 11, which we won't explore. You know those, you know the context, then whatever we come up with as far as an interpretation of the time period must fit those knowns, must fit that context. And with those three brothers and sisters, we have got no difficulty, mind stretching, but no difficulty in working out these time periods. Here are the time periods in the apocalypse. What time were you to finish, by the way? Pardon me? 12:50. Do you think you can make the distance? Do you think, brothers and sisters, you can go to 12:50? Is that a single conversion or a double conversion, 12:50? All right. Now, here are our time periods in the apocalypse. What have we got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. We don't have the 1,000-year, which is the no conversion one. Now, if we were to take out of that slide the double conversions and just leave the single conversions, there we are. There are our Revelation 11, verse 3, 1,260 days singly converted. I beg your pardon, I actually said that the 42 months in Revelation 11, 2 was a double conversion. It is not, my apologies. It is, of course, a single conversion. So there are our single conversions, brothers and sisters. Let's take an example of a very simple single conversion. Look at the context and look at some indisputable knowns, using those three criteria to determine it. Let's take this one here. Revelation 9, verse 5, and Revelation 9 and verse 10. Now I'm going to put this on the screen. Some of us have done this, so know it very well, others not so very well at all. What we've got here, the fifth angel sounded. Have a look at the end of chapter 8, because we did read chapter 8, didn't we? Revelation 8. Revelation 8 is all about the four wind trumpets. Revelation 8, we've got the four wind trumpets, the four Germanic barbarians that would come down from the Rhine and the Danube River, sweep into the Latin West and lop off one third of the Christian Empire. So Revelation 8, we've got our four wind trumpets that find their place in verse 7 of chapter 8. First angel sounded. Who was that? Who was that barbarian that came down in verse 7? It was Alaric or Alaric and his band of, what kind of goth was he? Who's read Asterix? He was a Visigoth. You know the two goths? They're all goths. You know the two kinds of goths? You got Visigoths, you got Ostrogoths. All right? So who is of German descent? Anyone of German descent here? Oh, I better be very careful here. Oh, you're from the West. You're a Visigoth. You're from the West, Vestingoths. Oh, you're from the Oist. Sorry about the German accent. You're from the Oist. You're the Eastern, not an Oyster Goth, an Eastern Goth. So you've got Western Goths, Visi. You've got Eastern Goths, Ostro. Goths. This is Alaric and the Western Goths. This is the Visigoths, okay? There's your first wind trumpet, verse 7. Second wind trumpet, verse 8. Who's this? Who's the second wind trumpet? The second German barbaric group that came down. The Vandals, Genseric, or Gaiseric, or Gaiseric. So Genseric and the Vandals were the second wind trumpet. Third wind trumpet in verse 10. Who was this? Third wind trumpet, verse 10. Attila and his mob of Huns, yes. Now we come to verse 12, the fourth Germanic tribe or barbaric group that would come down, completing the four, who would lop off the Latin part of the Christian Catholic Empire. This would be in 12, this would be Theodoric and the Ostrogoths, the Eastern Goths who'd come into Rome and take over Rome and rule in Rome. All right, four wind trumpets, brothers and sisters. Now, verse 13. I beheld and heard an angel fly through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels that are yet to sound. So now we've got introduced, in the end of chapter 8, we've got our four wind trumpets, four judgments through the barbarians, the German barbarians in chapter 8. Now we're introduced to woe, woe, woe. Three more trumpets. Our three trumpets are there. There's our four wind trumpets. Alaric and the Visigoths, Genseric, the Vandals, Attila, the Huns, Theodoric, the Eastern Goths. Now, wind trumpets gone. Woe, woe, woe. There they are. There's first woe trumpet is the fifth trumpet, second woe trumpet is the sixth trumpet, and the third woe trumpet is the seventh. All got that? So there it is. The three woes, 5, 6, and 7. So here we are in chapter 9, and we're introduced in chapter 9 to the fifth angel would sound his trumpet. There's the fifth trumpet, there's the first woe trumpet. Now these judgments that God would bring would come through, verse 7, the Saracens. And the Saracens, or the children of the desert, would sweep out of Arabia. They'd spill into Palestine with the Saracens, the locusts, and they would stream across North Africa, and they would stream up into Spain, and then they'd get stopped. They wanted to take Europe. They wanted to make Europe Islamic, Muslim. But when they got to there, they were turned back by Charlemagne's grandfather, Charles Martel, Charles the Hammer. So here are the Saracens, the children of the desert, the locusts. And the Revelation 9 paints them, doesn't it? They had crowns like gold, yellow turbans. They had faces like men, beards, hair like women, their long flowing locks coming out of their yellow turbans. So here were the Saracens streaming across the desert, and they're coming into Spain wanting to take Europe. And God says, nope, Europe will not be Islamic. Europe will be Catholic for the days in the end times. So the grandfather of Charlemagne stopped the Saracens. Well, the Saracens streamed around here, tried to take Constantinople. No way are you going to take Constantinople, you Saracens. That would be reserved for the Turks. That would be reserved for the sixth trumpet, or the second woe. Alrighty, so here we are, we've got the Saracens. Shape, they look like locusts. They were like horses, and on their heads were crowns of gold, their yellow turbans, and they had beards and long hair like women. Alright, time period, brothers and sisters. That's the context. Now, looking at the time period, and these locusts, says in verse 5, and to them it was given that they should not kill men, but they should torment men for 5 months. And their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. And over here you've got in verse 10, they had tails like unto scorpions. So John sees these locusts, got head like horses, tails like scorpions. What an amazing symbol. They had tails like scorpions, and they had stings in their tails. And their power was to hurt men 5 months. So you've got 5 months, 5 months. Single conversion. So how long is this? Apocalyptically, if we singly convert, 5 months. How many?
150 years.
Very good. Day for a year. Well done. 5 months, 30 days in a month. 530 is 150 days. 150 days converted is 150 years. Very good. Why is it written twice? Because the Islamic Empire came into being in AD 636 and declined to the point where it disappeared. Did the Saracens, the Turks took over thereafter or soon after. So we've got a period of 636 through to 936, the spread of Islam with the Saracens. That is a period of 300 years. Why does God write it twice? 150? 150. 5 months, 5 months. 150 years, 150 years makes 300 years, and the empire lasted 636 through to 936. Why didn't God say they will sting men, they will torment men for 10 months? End of story.
Something happened in 780.
Yeah. It's decorum, you see. Decorum of the symbol. Context. 300 years, God says. 150, 150. I'm not going to call it 10 months. Do you know why? Because locusts are only active for 5 months. Not 10. So God chooses a little creature and says, this is not going to fall prey to an incorrect decorum. Just like the bodies laying in the street. You can't lay in a street for longer than 3.5 days because it gets to the fourth and then it stinks. So here's a decorum. Five months there. Bring them both together and you've got your 636 through to 936. Locusts are busy little creatures for 5 months of the year. God knew that. Of course he did. And therefore he put that in. What an amazing thing. So there's a single conversion, looking at the context, looking at knowns, and looking at the decorum of the symbol. Now look at the scorpion's tails. They have scorpion's tails, scorpion's tails, scorpion's tails. How accurate is the Bible? These are Saracens, and they're going to torment, not kill, just sting. They tried to take Constantinople. Sting. But they never killed. The Turks did, not the Saracens. Now when you look at their little scorpion's tails, if you were to look at the dictionary for scorpion, the dictionary definition, apart from this little creature that runs around, it's an ancient form of ballista or catapult for hurling stones. So what these Saracens used to do, they used to use Saracen fire, which was burning crude oil mixed with secret chemicals, to intensify their burning. So John sees these locusts with head like horses and yellow turbans and beards and hair like women, and he sees them charging in a battle, and they're towing behind them stings like scorpions' tails. They're catapults. And they whip them around when they get to the walls, and they filled it up with all this, like napalm. And they flew it over the walls and woof like that, like fire. That was the sting, the awful sting in the tails of these locusts. And look at that, wouldn't you know it, in the dictionary, under the definition of scorpion, it actually talks about catapults that the Arabs had invented and used in their warfare. What an amazing thing, brothers and sisters and young people. Well, we only got time for one more, which is okay. We've done that one. Let's have a look at this one. This is an amazing one. Good one to finish on. Because there's a couple of nice little stories. How are you going back there, young people? You with us? Good? Excellent. Fantastic. Won't ask the mums and dads whether they are or not, but you young people are there. Brothers and sisters, all right, we've looked at 5 months, 5 months, two lots of five, 150 years, 150 years, 300, 636 through 936, the Saracens. Revelation 9, verse 15. Let's have a read of this. Revelation 9. Got this time period, 1 hour, 1 day, 1 month, and 1 year. Verse 15. And the four angels were loosed. This is our sixth trumpet. This is the second woe trumpet. The four angels were loosed, which were prepared, no, having been prepared, they were loosed. They weren't prepared. They were not prepared for an hour, a day, a month, and a year. Once they were prepared, they were let loose for an hour, a month, a day, and a year. That's not a good translation. They weren't prepared for this time. God says, go, and they went, and on the loose they went for that period of time. More about that in a moment. So, verse 15. The four angels were loosed, and they were prepared for an hour, a day, a month, and a year, for to slay a third part of men. The Saracens tormented. Sting, sting, sting. Can't kill. These ones will kill. I want to take Constantinople. No way are you Saracens going to take Constantinople. The Turks will. So here, brothers and sisters and young people, are the four angels, the four waves of Turkoman tribes that would flood from the river Euphrates and spill out into the area of Constantinople. Now, have a look at the time period. This is an astounding time period. The four angels, in the Greek, having been prepared, as it should be correctly translated, were loosed for an hour, a day, a month, and a year, for to slay the third part of men. I'll show you what that means. The time period. A day. On the basis of a day for a year, how many years is a day? One what? One what? 1 year. It's very good. Well done. So on the basis of a day for a day is a year. That's very good. All right, what about a month? How many years? Sure? Positive? A month is how many years on a day for a year? 30 years. Very good. I've got that on there. There's 30 days in a month, Jewish month. 30 years. What about a year? On a day for a year principle, how many years is a year? How many days in a Jewish year? 360. Day for a year, 360 days equals 360 years. Okay? 1 year is 360 days. 1 month is 30 days. 1 year is 360 days, 360 years. What about an hour? Very good. 1 hour. There are 12 hours in a day. It's 1 month. There are 12 hours. Let's go back. Jesus said, are there not 12 hours in a day? From 6 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock at night. Are there not 12 hours in a day? So an hour is 1/12 of a day. A month is 1/12 of a year. Hour, month. Get that? Hour is 1/12 of a day. Month is 1/12 of a year. Hour, month. And there are 30 days in a month. Therefore, it's 30 years. Very good. So 1 hour, but we've got 1/12 of a day, which is 1 month. So brothers and sisters, we've got 391 years and 1 month. God says to these Turkoman tribes, go. And what you're going to do, you're going to accomplish in 391 years and 1 month. So what happened? When the Turks came across from the Euphrates out of Revelation chapter 9, we know that in May, the 29th of May, 1453, Constantinople fell to Muhammad II. That's a historical fact. 1453, Constantinople fell. The Saracens, in the fifth trumpet, wanted to take Constantinople. Couldn't do it. Little scorpion's tails. Sting, sting. A little bit of catapult, bit of napalm. No good. The Turks had something better. So the Turks come in, and in 1453, in May 1453, Constantinople fell. The prize they were after for centuries finally was realized. But in the 27th of April, 1062, a fellow by the name of Toghrul Beg, who was a Seljuk, one of the Turkomans that came across the Euphrates, swept in under the words of Revelation. There they go. There's a rush of these four Turkoman tribes. In he comes. He comes in 1062. He says to the Caliph, Your job's finished, my friend. Just stand up. I'm not going to kill you, but you go over there and you're a figurehead. I'm taking your daughter and I'm marrying your daughter and I am the figurehead of authority. You can just be over there as a representative. So the caliph was over there and Toghrul Beg married the caliph's daughter. I am in charge of the Saracen Islamic Empire. 27th of April, 1062. Brothers and sisters, he began to take Constantinople in 1062. It was completed in 1453, and that is exactly 391 years and 1 month. That's astounding. Toghrul Beg said, I want Constantinople. He's a Seljuk. It wasn't until an Ottoman came. 391 years and 1 month later to the day, he took the very thing that Toghrul Beg desired 391 years and 1 month before. Brothers and sisters, that is astounding. All right, let's finish our study, our session together on this note. The record says when Constantinople fell in 1453, the Turks are going to use something a bit better than a scorpion tail. They're going to use something a bit better than catapults with Saracen fire. Because it says in Revelation 9 verse 18, and by these three was the third part of men killed. Let's pause. The Turks are coming in. The Turks are going to conquer the Hellenic East. The Saracens had conquered the Hellenized East. The German barbarians in Revelation 8 under the four wind trumpets conquered the Latin West. So when you read Revelation 8 and Alaric comes, a third of this, a third of that. All the way through Revelation 8, a third, a third, a third, a third. And that was that third that was given to the four barbarians, the Visigoths and the Vandals and the Huns and the Ostrogoths. One third, whoosh, gone of the Christian Empire. In come the Saracens, the second one third is lopped off. In come the Turks, the last third of the Christian Roman world was lopped off. By these three shall the third, that part, of men be killed by fire, smoke, and brimstone which issued out of their mouths. You know what we're talking about? We're talking about cannons. And so when you see, has anyone heard, you've heard this story before? Who's heard this story before that I'm going to tell you? But you haven't heard the story, so you don't know whether you've heard it before. Exactly right. When you read about these cannons, I mean, they had cannons. I mean, John's seeing this. I mean, John's there writing this, and he's seeing Turks coming against the walls of Constantinople, and he's looking at cannon. What's a cannon? Now, they had cannon in those days where they had muzzle-loading cannon and they had breech-loading cannon. So they go over there with their cannonballs, if it's a muzzle-loaded cannon, and they'd get up there and they'd woof it into the woof means put. So they'd put it into the end of this hole and the ball rolled down. Of course, they'd fire it. They had breech-loading cannons where they'd open up the back there, the breech, and they'd put the cannonball and they'd close that. And when John sees this, he said it's like a serpent. He's got a mouth like a lion, but it's got a serpent's tail. And when it strikes, it's like a serpent. Well, you've seen a cannon go off. When you put the cannonball in the end of it and you light it, the cannon goes woof, woof, like that. It goes back and then it fires forward, just like a snake. We've got them in Australia, brown snakes and red-belly blacks. They go back on their tail and they launch from their tail and they strike with their head. And these cannons go woof, woof, like that. And John is amazed at what he sees. Well, brothers and sisters, these cannons that took Constantinople, there is one of them. Now, that cannon there, I'll just tell you the story, then we'll finish our study. These cannons that Constantinople had, Constantinople should not have had the cannons. Sorry, Constantinople should have had the cannons. The Ottoman Turks should not have had them. There they were on the other side of the Bosporus. Now, the little story is this, is that there was a fellow, you talk about the angels at work. Now, this little story I'm going to tell you comes out of this book, Dürchmead, The Hinges of Battle, on page 70. And what he says in his book, he says the hinge of battle at Constantinople was gunpowder and cannon. a weapon that was destined to revolutionize future warfare, and a gate was left wide open. The story goes like this. There was an Hungarian bell maker, and his name was Urban. And he's in Hungary, and he's a bell maker. He's made a few bells. Have you heard this story before? No, okay. Who has? You can leave the room. Oh, no, you're okay, Gary. You're fine. There's a Hungarian bell maker, and he's making bells. And he'd finished his bell production for the day, and he's looking for something to do. So he got this stuff that had been invented by this German monk, and it was called Schwarzpulver. Schwarz, black, pulver, powder. So he gets this black powder, and he pops it in his bell, and he puts a wick in there, and he lights it. Just fizzes. So he says, okay. So he gets some more Schwarzpulver, does Urban, the Hungarian bell maker. He puts a wick in there, and he puts a rock in the top of the bell, and he lights it. Boof! Over it goes, over his house, over the neighbour's house, big crater in the ground. He went, it's fantastic. This is fantastic. So he gets a barrel shape, and he gets around a rock, and he starts to work on this experiment, and he pops a rock in there, and he boof! Off it goes. He said, this is fantastic. So he makes these sketches, and he gets on his horse, and he says to his wife, I'm off. She said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to Constantinople. Why? He said, because the emperor in Constantinople could use this because he's got the Ottomans on the other side trying to get him. So he jumps on his horse and off he goes. He gets to Constantinople, he knocks on the door and he says, I want to come in, I want to talk to the emperor. What do you want? Let me in and I'll show you. So he showed them these sketches. They said, get out, you're an idiot. So they kicked him out. He goes across to the Bosporus and he says to Mahomet II, he says, I've got something for you. He said, what is it? He said, I'll show you. So he built a cannon. He built 100. They built 100 cannons. So he builds this cannon, and he says to Mohammed II, he says, watch this. And he says, you're watching? You're watching the Bosphorus? He lets it off. Boof! He says, see that ship out there? He said, keep watching. And it disappeared. And Mehmet II, the sultan of the Ottoman Empire, he said, that is fantastic. He said, what can you do to the walls of Constantinople? Now, before I tell you Urban's response, they used to call Mehmet II, Mohammed II, who took Constantinople, his men used to call him Hunkar, drinker of blood. That's what his men called him. Because if you got on the wrong side of him, he would nail your turban while you were alive, nail it to your head. Then he'd cut your head off. And then he'd put your head on a pole outside his front door. So if you came ringing and selling something, or you wanted to talk to him, you'd see these heads with nailed turbans in them, and you knew who you were dealing with, and you knew what to say and what not to say. So there's Urban, really proud, blew this ship apart out there in the Bosporus, and Mehmet says, what can you do about those walls? And Urban said, anything you like, knowing that he was Hunkar, drinker of blood. And you know, brothers and sisters and young people, they made 100 cannons, and they made two of them, that size, and they called them Mahometis. They were so big, it took 400 men and 60 oxen to move, operate, and maintain one of those cannons. 400 men and 60 oxen. Could you imagine the people in Constantinople as they're bringing this great big Mahometi up over the hill, leaning on the balustrades of Constantinople saying, heck, this bloke was here a few months ago selling that weapon to us. We could have had it. But the angel said, no, this weapon will be given to the Turks in order that they might fulfill the record by these three. Fire, smoke, and brimstone shall Constantinople be taken. Well, there, brothers and sisters, is an example, just a little example, of looking at time periods in the apocalypse. Our time is gone. Single conversion, double conversion, context of the chapter, and looking at established, irrefutable, indisputable knowns. So thank you very much, brothers and sisters. And young...
Just a real quick question.
John. Yes.
How do you know when to either single or double convert?
Very good question. Very good. No, there's no such thing as a nutshell. There's no such thing as an answer in a nutshell. I will just direct you to having a copy of these slides, because we've had the School of the Prophets a few times, and that question is asked, and the best way to answer that question is Revelation 8 and verses 1 and 2. There was silence in heaven for about the space of a half an hour. That will show us that chapter, that context, indisputable knowns, so history, context, do I doubly convert, do I singly convert? I think, in a nutshell, context, indisputable knowns of the chapter first. That will tell you then whether it is single or double. And the answer is simply this, and I'm just going to go very, very quickly. We read Revelation 8, didn't we? Sorry, you ask. 1 minute. You're not getting any more than 1 minute from me. Sorry, brethren, don't blame me. Don't blame me. Blame John. Turn over, if you will. 1 minute. Revelation 8, verse 1. Won't take any more than 1 minute. Right. Revelation 8, verse 1. When he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in the political heavens of Rome for about the space of half an hour. That is 14 years, that time period. It's about the space. If it was exactly the space of half an hour, it would be 15 years. You do the math, you go away and work that out. But let me just say this, there would be silence in the political heavens of Rome for about the space of half an hour. This silence came when Constantine took the whole Roman world. So if you want a date in your margin, if you haven't got it there, AD 324. Verse 1, chapter 8, AD 324. Constantine is in charge. Woof! Silence. Everything's peaceful. 14 years later, turn the page, Constantine dies. Verse 5. And the angel took the censer, filled it with fire of the altar, cast it to the earth, and there were voices, thunderings and lightnings. No longer tranquility, no longer silence, there is now chaos. That's the death of Constantine, AD 337. Should be written next to that, voices, thunderings and lightnings. So the chapter starts off, AD 324, woof, silence. 14 years later, woof, chaos. Verse 5, Constantine's dead. Now we did this at the School of the Prophets, and they go, how do you know it's 14 years? How do you convert half an hour to make it years and make it 14? That's a classic example. Do your research, young men, young women. And we had young people saying, it could be this. Yeah, that doesn't fit the context. Oh, it could be this. Yeah, that doesn't fit the indisputable knowns. Get the idea? But it is 14 years. So there's no such thing as an in the nutshell. Thank you very much. You've proved it unequivocally. And why should you learn it in 2 minutes when it's taken me nearly 200 years? Thank you, brothers and sisters.